23 minutes past the hour. We're not on time, and we aren't under budget. But it's the Peter B. Collins Show, and we will continue. It's time for our weekly visit with his Bradness, Brad Friedman, proprietor of bradblog.com, where they cover politics, elections, and other issues. Hello, Brad.
We are on time and under budget here, Peter.
Well, I'm glad you are. I understand you've been busy marking all the liquor bottles.
Yes, I have. Keeping an eye on things while I'm on the road. As a matter of fact, I just made it into a hotel on time and under budget to do my weekly Peter B. Collins, my favorite stop of the week.
So you're ensconced in Silicon Valley right now?
I am indeed going to be speaking this weekend at the California Democratic Coalition Annual Convention up in Santa Clara on all things election reform related. And just so I'm clear, not being a partisan myself, I'm more than happy to speak to the Republican Democratic or the Republican California Coalition if they'd like me to come on by.
Well, I'm sure they're all listening, and an invitation will be forthcoming.
I can't wait.
Now, this is taking place at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Is that right?
You know what? You may have to help me on that. Yes, Santa Clara Convention Center. Here we go. And it is open to the public if folks want to come on by. Lots of stuff going on there. I understand tonight there'll be a debate between the lieutenant gubernatorial folks.
No, we were just talking about that. It's a tough race for Democrats because there are three very popular candidates vying for the nomination.
Indeed, and I would like to go there and see if I can ask some questions myself of them, although I may be working in the hotel tonight preparing my speech for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And you speak at 5 p.m., is that right?
5 p.m., that's correct, at a plenary session. Apparently they've bumped me up. I was going to do a workshop. Now I'm going to speak at a plenary because of all of this breaking news that's been going on out here in California over the past week, this lawsuit that has been filed. So we are going to have plenty to talk about tomorrow at the convention.
And for people who aren't familiar with the area there in Santa Clara, take 101 to the Great America exit, and there are signs to the convention center there. It's pretty easy to find.
I wish I would have been taking notes because I don't know how the hell to get there, so thank you.
Okay, 101 Great America exit.
All right, 101 Great America exit, right? That's down.
Okay. Don't take the Bowers side. The Bowers side will take you the wrong way.
Don't take the Bowers side. It'll take us the wrong way. Okay, we got it.
That's the Brad's driver. He's briefing her. Okay, that's item number one. Why don't we talk about the lawsuit briefly now? We got about 2 minutes before the break, and then we'll come back and we can go into more detail. But from what I understand, Dolores Huerta, who I have great respect for, one of the co-founders of the United Farm Workers with Cesar Chavez, a woman who was brutally beaten by San Francisco police at a protest she participated in when Bush the first was in office. She is the plaintiff of record in this lawsuit. Am I right?
There are several. I think there's. I think we've got something like 25 plaintiffs. My understanding was a fellow by the name of Jody Holder was the lead plaintiff. But you're right. It could be her. There's a bunch of real good folks on this, and something like 25 plaintiffs in all, and the defendants leading the list of defendants would be, of course, Secretary of State Bruce McPherson, and then about 18 county registrars, all of whom use Diebold in their particular counties.
I presume that you're on the same email list, but Joseph Jody Holder is a very bright man who has been following these issues in some detail. And when I get emails from him, they're lengthy and rich and quite factual.
You're exactly right. He's really sharp, and he's been very helpful to me as I've been trying to sort out a lot of this. He's always been a very good source whenever I've had any question, because there was some question of whether McPherson's certification of Diebold in the state, if it in fact violated state law. And he was very helpful to me, at least, in pointing out the specific state laws which, in fact, were violated by McPherson's recertification of Diebold out here.
And 1 minute remaining, so let's go into a little more detail. The allegations in this lawsuit are that McPherson did not follow the law or his own policies in the way he kind of secretly recertify the Diebold machines.
Indeed. And there are a number of points, and I can give you some more specifics after the break, but by and large, California law requires that any voting machines that are certified here also meet the federal certification standards and the federal voting system standards, which very clearly say that there can be no interpreted code in voting machines, and now Diebold has admitted very specifically that they do in fact have interpreted code, which would make certification illegal.
And maybe you'll be able to interpret a code for those of us who don't understand that. Coming up next, Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Finger Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Finger Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Finger Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Finger Toys is open daily.
You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley with Talking Matters, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540. Our next show is about music and creativity. You'll be fascinated with my guest. Award-winning composer and conductor, Lawrence Rosenthal, will tell you what it's like to collaborate with George Lucas. And Margaret Elson, author of Passionate Practice, will share how learning music creatively can actually affect your life. Lawrence joins the conversation at Talking Matters to tell us how composing live-action film music was very different from the animated movie he scored for Steven Spielberg. Margaret will share how performance anxiety and creative blocks can be solved. Don't miss this show. Keep listening and we'll keep talking about things that matter. All my shows are archived on joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. Tune in Music and Creativity this Saturday at 3.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Peter B. I want to express some solidarity with the people who took to the streets today on behalf of undocumented workers in America. Minutes past the hour. If you'd like to join us, lines are open for you from the Central Coast at 831-899-5792. If you're listening in Eureka on KGOE, you can call us toll-free at 888-579-2540. And we continue with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, and we are joined by the Registrar of Voters in Humboldt County, our North State affiliate area, Carolyn Cernich. Welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you today.
Thank you.
And Tom Seaborn, our friend at KGOE, sent me some information that you have made decisions about what technology, what platforms will be used in the upcoming primary this June in Humboldt County. Tell us about it.
Well, we have tried to make those decisions, but we're, you know, this is government. We formed here in Humboldt County an elections advisory committee that would help us look at all of the issues, accessibility and so on, that we were faced with through HAVA, as well as everything else that relates to elections in our time. And it was the suggestion of that committee, the recommendation of that committee, that rather than the Diebold TSX machines, that had been, I had been directed by the Board of Supervisors to negotiate with Diebold for only enough to become minimally compliant. We weren't going to replace our whole system mm-hmm. with the TSX machines, only add one to each polling place to become minimally compliant. But we've not done that. Instead, we're going to use perhaps not for June. We're trying as best we can, but we're still a little stuck there. We're trying to use a system that is an assistive, low-tech assistive device for to assist the disabled in marking their ballot.
And that's called the vote pad?
The one we're looking at is vote pad. I know there are others on the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Brad Friedman, I believe I read an item on Brad's blog about VotePad, and in general, you find it an acceptable, relatively fraud-free system.
Well, what the disabled folks that I've talked to have, you know, said about it is that it allows them to vote. It meets the criteria in the Help America Vote Act, the disability criteria, and yes, indeed, it gives you an actual paper ballot. It doesn't have these crazy electronics with the software code that is kept secret and so forth. So it's.
And by the way, if I can interrupt just briefly, yeah. It's that ballot is the same ballot that every able-bodied voter at that polling place is voting on.
Exactly. And so that's why it's a late runner here as coming in as something that is a very good alternative, certainly to these touch screens. Now, we still have concerns because those ballots are going to be run through, and Cynthia, you can correct me here if I'm incorrect, but those will then be most likely run through a optical scanner. They could also be hand-counted, and I know we have had problems with the Diebold optical scanners, but in fact, we do end up with a paper ballot, which bottom line is the most important thing, so that we can go back if there is any questions and look at these ballots and as well audit them, which is something that is very, very difficult to do with these touchscreen machines, even the ones that include these toilet paper roll thermal receipts, so to speak.
And Carolyn Cernich, what is your choice for the tabulation machinery?
Yes, he's right. We have been using, in 1995, I believe, this county contracted with Global for optical scan. Global was then bought out by Diebold. So, in fact, we do have Diebold optical scan equipment. But we do have paper ballots.
What is your level of confidence in the Diebold optical scan?
Well, Humboldt County is considerably smaller than some of the counties that you may be broadcasting into or from. But we have, through our audits in the past, we have not had any reason to for concern over the security of the ballots cast. That is, isn't it, the biggest thing, that the vote that is cast is counted as it is cast and not manipulated in some way.
Seems simple, but yes, that is what we're looking for.
That's correct. So to this point in time, our 1% or 1% plus, actually, manual recount of those ballots has verified that the results that we have received have been accurate.
Brad?
Well, one of the problems that we have with those optical, those Diebold optical scanners in particular, those are the very machines that I'm sure Ms. Cernich knows down in Leon County, Florida, were recently used in a test, a hack test.
The Hershey test, yes.
Yeah, the Hershey test that Ion Sancho down there allowed some computer security professionals to come in, and in fact they were able to place code, and this was the interpreted code we spoke of before the break, this special code, they were able to place it onto the memory cards, and the result was that even though the paper ballots were correct, if they were counted in full, the optical scanner printed out completely flipped election results. Now, Bruce McPherson, in learning about this hack, put a security team together at the University of Berkeley to look at what the Harry Hursty hack had shown. They confirmed, in fact, that it is a very real threat. They found 16 other bugs on the memory cards alone. And McPherson went ahead and certified these systems anyway with some provisions that, frankly, as far as I can tell from these provisions, and Ms. Cernich can confirm this, don't really give us the measure of security that we need. In other words, you can put code onto these memory cards even if they're locked into the machine, even if they're soldered in, frankly. So I think his security concerns were not accurate. Were not adequate, and there is real concern that folks can get to these cards and they can hack an election without a trace being left behind.
Well, I wouldn't question what you're saying, but I'm confused a little bit because it was my understanding that the reason that Mr. Hursty didn't conduct his test in California is that, unlike Florida, where he was given unfettered access to the machine and the memory card and everything, in California they said, we'd like you to conduct this test in as if it were during an election, which would include, I cannot speak for other counties, but it was my understanding, and I know in Humboldt County, that those are sealed in to the machine. I mean, they're under seal when they're in the machine. And that was a deterrent to Hursty's test. He did not perform it in California. I could be wrong about that, but that was my understanding of the situation.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things that they prevented him from being able to do, as I understand the situation in California, was having physical access to those machines. Now, in Florida, he was able to have physical access to that memory card, and McPherson's directive to protect against such a hack is, you know, to make sure that once those memory cards are in place in the machine, essentially that they're, as you said, sealed in there, that they never get removed. Now, setting aside the fact that we have learned that these this seal, the security tape, can in fact be peeled away without actually being broken, it turns out that there are apparently a number of other ways that if you have physical access to that machine, you can change the code that is on those cards. So simply because they stay in the machine does not mean that they're secure.
Okay. That I don't know. You may be correct. But first of all, I should say that there are a number of different seals, and that tape seal that you speak of is only one of several. Ours, in fact, use a wire seal that would have to be physically cut and broken in order to be removed. It's not. We don't use the tape seal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't know all of the different varieties of seals that may be available to counties in California, but I know the one we use is a wire device.
Okay, a simple question. Do you ever permit poll workers or precinct directors, whatever title you give them, to take a machine home overnight and then take it to the polling place in the morning, or are the machines under your control at all times?
The poll workers do have them at their home and deliver them to the polling place. Before they receive them, that memory card is sealed in there.
Okay. Now, in reference to your decision to at least hopefully use the vote pad system for disabled voters,
yes.
What would the general population use?
The marked ballot with the bubble.
Okay, so it's just a manual ballot where you ink in the bubble of the person you're voting for, then it goes into the optical scanner.
That's correct,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that is considered to be relatively, Brad, right, one of the most reliable systems, absent the issues about the Diebold optical scan memory cards?
Well, indeed, yeah, because you do end up with a countable paper ballot that you can either audit or go back to. Of course, 1% certainly isn't, you know, sufficient to catch problems because you're going to miss them 99% of the time, essentially. But as she says, when those machines go home at night with the poll workers, anything can happen to those machines because they can be, my understanding is, they can be networked, they can be accessed through all kinds of ways, and information can be put onto those memory cards even if the memory cards are locked in the machine. And that's a very serious concern because that code can then be programmed to essentially delete itself the next day before anybody gets to see that what has actually happened to that code.
Carolyn, a comment?
You know, I don't have any comment to that. I have heard that comment before, and I've not been able to address it and prove it or disprove it. But could I tell you about one thing that we're going to try in Humboldt County in order to bring a little better verifiability to our system? It was suggested by a member of our Elections Advisory Committee that perhaps we could develop a system where as a ballot came out of, and this would be in a central count type situation, not at the polling place, but if we scanned all of the ballots that had been counted, and one verification would be that, yes, the machine says it counted this many, and yes, we have scanned this many, and now make available to whoever wants to count them by whatever method they wish to count them, here's a CD that contains all of the ballots for the precincts you requested. These are the ballots that we counted, and this is what we got. You count them by any method that you trust, and if we don't agree, by golly, we better talk.
That's a measure of transparency I certainly welcome. Thank you for joining us. Carolyn Cernich, is county clerk and supervisor of voting in Humboldt County, and I appreciate you joining us today, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you. We'll continue with Brad Friedman in just a moment. And Chris is still holding, I hope. Anybody else who wants to call, join us, 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is KRXA General Manager Hal Ginsberg, and I'm urging all of our listeners to tune in this Saturday, March 25th at noon, to one of my favorite shows, Paul Sanford's Election Radio Network, right here on AM 540. This Saturday, Paul will feature exclusive interviews with the two Democratic candidates in the race for State Assembly in District 28, Anna Caballero of Salinas and Anna Ventura Ferris of Watsonville. Remember, noon, Saturday, March 25th on AM 540 to hear Paul interview and discuss the two Annas running for State Assembly in District 28.
This week on Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, meet Louis Basil. Louis is the president of Jamestown Real Estate, where he'll share his knowledge on investing in Florida and North Carolina. His properties are easily rented with high rents and as low as 5% down. For more information on this show, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. Rock, Roll, and Real Estate. Sunday mornings at 10, heard all over Northern California. Your number one source for all your real estate needs.
Certified estate planner Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources is issuing a special invitation to her upcoming valuable seminars for seniors and their families. Michelle Ashen is your source for critical information like how to avoid nursing home costs, how to reduce or eliminate taxes on unearned income and at death, whether long-term care insurance is worth it. Michelle Ashen will also teach you how you can increase disposable income, invest in the stock market without risk of capital loss, avoid probate costs and delays, use the new multi-generation Stretch IRA to avoid unnecessary taxation. Michelle Ashen addresses the rights of all seniors and reveals little-known information that can save you thousands. For information regarding Michelle's next seminar, including date, time, and place, or to schedule a free personal consultation, call 641-0236. 641-0236. Remember, knowledge is power, so reserve your seat today. 831-641-0236.
KRXA 540 traffic time is 5:49, and here she is, Amy Knight.
We're still very busy, Peter, and we have a new crash in Gilroy, South 101 at Monterey Street, a three-car crash blocking lanes. Injuries reported in the accident, so expect delays as you approach Gilroy now on South 101. Also, Highway 25 at South 101, reports of a separate accident still clearing on the shoulder, and in Ben Lomond, Highway 9 at Main Street, a two-car collision off to the side. In Eureka, it's actually Watsonville, Eureka Canyon Road at Highland Way, an accident off to the side there as well, and no new problems for Highway 1 through Carmel and Monterey. McDonald's is taking snacking to a whole new level with the Snack Wrap, premium chicken, jack cheese, and fresh lettuce with ranch sauce on a soft tortilla. $1.29 only at McDonald's. Have a great weekend. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
You have a great weekend too, Amy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We got the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the home stretch here on a Friday evening, 10 minutes away from 6 o'clock, as we continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And Brad, I'll get your brief on Carolyn Cernich in just a moment, but Chris from Selena's been on hold for over half an hour, and I'm feeling really guilty about it. Chris, join us.
How are you doing?
Thanks for holding on. What's up?
I haven't heard much about this. But apparently there was a gentleman in Southern California who blew the whistle on Diebold selling Alameda County uncertified machines. And apparently he was arrested and charged with felony counts, I guess, for lawyer-client privilege. Have you heard anything about this, or do you have any comments on that, or what's happening to this guy?
Yeah, it sounds like you might be conflating a couple of stories there. I believe who you're talking about is Stephen Heller, the fellow who was a temp worker at Diebold's a law firm of Jones Day back in 2004, and he discovered some documents that the attorneys were admitting essentially that Diebold had broken the California state law using uncertified software, essentially, and pardon the shorthand here, but using uncertified software in machines. He shared that information, and he shared those documents with others because it essentially was telling Diebold what they can do to either lie or get around breaking the law here. He made those documents public, and eventually that led to the decertification of Diebold back in 2004, and they ended up settling with the state for $2.6 million. That Stephen Heller has since, just a couple of weeks ago, been charged with three felony counts of disclosing that information. I believe that's what the caller is talking about.
So it's not to do with Alameda County? Is there an issue with Alameda County getting uncertified machines?
Well, I think that all of the California counties were using uncertified software because Diebold was patching them up with these software updates that were not certified by the state. I'm sure Alameda was one of those counties because I'm pretty my understanding is that it was all over the state of California that this was occurring, and that's why they ended up decertifying those machines back in 2004.
Okay, well, hey, thanks a lot.
All right, Chris.
I'm clear on that.
Thank you for checking in, and just for Chris's information and others in the Central Coast area, we are still attempting to get our second interview with Tony Anchundo, the Registrar of Voters for Monterey County. I called his office the other day, listened to 10 minutes of bland, soft rock, and then sent him an email and haven't heard a thing back. Brad, your reaction to the report from Carolyn Cernich?
Well, I'm for one, I do want to congratulate her for you know, being willing to talk about this, and in fact, my understanding is she's one of the good guys, and that's why she's looking into this vote pad that we've discussed. Now, she is named as a defendant in this lawsuit that was brought this week because of their use of these Diebold machines out there. So I do congratulate her for looking at vote pad, getting away from those touchscreen machines. However, obviously, as you heard, there are still security concerns with these machines, and, you know, as she admitted, you can, you know, solder those memory cards into the machine, but then you send them home at night with poll workers, and good Lord, anything can happen because you can access those machines without, you know, taking the memory card out, and this is one of the concerns, and this is why this lawsuit was filed, to try to get these guys to stop using these proven hackable machines.
Yeah, and you can imagine in Humboldt County, somebody might spill their bong on the machine, and you just don't know what'll happen.
Which is gives them a whole different situation in Humboldt. But you're right; you never know.
All right, now Brad, take us to Texas, where the recount from the recent primary produced some stunning anomalies.
Oh well, I tell you, we have had just a mess. So far, we've had two primary elections this year, and both of them have been unmitigated disasters. The first one was in Texas, where all kinds of numbers were not adding up, and in fact, in one mandated recount, it was a very close election in one area, the Secretary of State actually had to come in and stop the recount because it was discovered on Hart InterCivic voting machines. The numbers that were printing out were some 20% different than the numbers that were printed on election night. This has prompted problems all over the state. There was 100,000 extra votes in Tarrant County, Texas, and I just broke a story a few days ago at bradblog.com of a conservative Republican former Supreme Court justice who was running in a primary down there against a candidate who was the favorite of the Governor Perry and, I understand, a Bush family friend. All kinds of numbers were reported that made no sense at all, including one county down there, Winkler County, where he had previously in 2002 and 2004, he had handily won the county by, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you know, something like 43% the first year, and he won it by 23% the next year. This year, he lost it by 100%. He received zero votes in Winkler County. That was just one of the anomalies that they're concerned about. Another is in Tarrant County, which is his home county, which he, in 2004, he had won, he had beat his statewide average by something like 13% in his home county of Tarrant. This year, he lost to his statewide result by 23%. So he's concerned. He's looking at challenging this entire election down there and getting access to these Hart machines and these ES&S machines down in Texas. And I released, as I think we talked last week, a whistleblower who used to work for Hart and then went to work for Tarrant County, who tried back in 2004 to get the Secretary of State's attention and to tell them about criminal activity and fraud that he saw concerning both these Hart InterCivic and ES&S machines where he worked and at Tarrant County.
And Brad, in 40 seconds, is it Illinois where additional problems were discovered?
Yeah. That was the next primary election that occurred. All kinds of problems with machines all over the state, including some breaking news that we ran last night. Some 400-plus memory cards, the type we were just talking about that can be hacked and so forth, they essentially, they're supposed to store the tabulations. Some 400-plus memory cartridges are now, I understand, completely missing in Illinois.
Well, but you do understand that in Illinois, the legacy is that free, fair, and honest elections have been banned since Daley took over in 1951.
Yep.
Brad, thanks for joining us. Good luck with your speech tomorrow in Santa Clara. I'd love to be there, but I'll be busy with my federally mandated fiction writing.
Happy
it's tax time.
Have a good week.
All right. Thank you, Brad. We'll talk to you next Friday. This is Peter B. Thank you for listening. We'll do it again starting Monday at 3. I hope you'll join us then.